Hello, welcome to the I4S Foundation's monthly podcast. My name is Daryl Scott, I'm an ISB board member, and I'm joined today by my colleagues Anne Tarker and Nick Anderson. We're going to use this podcast to provide you with a summary of the latest discussions and the decisions taken by the International Accounting Standards Board in the month of June. The main focus will be the June board meeting, which occurred from the 17th to the 19th of June. But first, I'd like to touch on some of the other activities that we've had ongoing during this month. So June has been a busy month. We had meetings with three of our standing stakeholder groups, the Capital Market Advisory Committee, which is a group of investors and users, our Global Preparers Forum, which is a preparer group, and the I4S Taxonomy Consultative Group. These groups are very important groups for the ISB in providing us with input as we progress through projects over time. We also had our annual conference, which this year was held in London. We had 300 people attending from 50 to 60 different countries. The conference is a set of updates and panel discussions that involve a lot of our staff and board members. I think what was really good about the conference was there was a lot of active participation with lots of audience questions, good engagement between the audience and between the staff and board members who attended. And then finally this week, our trustees are meeting in Munich right now. So those are the other issues that have happened. Moving on to the main topic of this podcast, which is the board discussions and discussions of the board discussions and decisions that were taken during the month. And again, I think it was a busy and quite compressed board week with a number of really substantial topics that were discussed. I think the first of those topics was primary financial statements. And Nick, I know this is a topic that's close to your heart. The end of this phase, I think, is now in sight.
Indeed, Daryl. So just to begin with, a high-level reminder in terms of the scope of this project, it's about making some very targeted improvements to the primary financial statements. Three elements in principle: improve structure through the introduction of some IFRS-specified subtotals in the income statement, some clearer principles and guidance around aggregation and disaggregation, and then finally, improving the transparency and discipline around selected non-GAAP performance measurements. So in May, the previous month, we decided that our consultation document here will be an exposure draft rather than a discussion paper. And that means that that document needs to be fairly close to what the final standard will look like. This month, the board discussed some of the more detailed issues, really just to bring some more clarification to the substantive points already agreed by the board. So not really looking at big proposals, but more around the margins. An example would be thinking about how to deal with gains and losses on foreign exchange movements and the extent to which these should be consistent with the other subtotals that the board has already decided on for the income statement. We also looked at how we might guide companies to determine the tax impact of management performance measures. And there was some consideration of transition arrangements as well. The board decided the effective date when we took into account all the requirements, how difficult this might be for companies, would probably be between 18 and 24 months in terms of from the publication of the standard to the effective date. Looking ahead, there's still some further issues just to wrap up around the edge. I think these are clarifying issues. So looking forward from here, the staff will bring a few more similar issues to clarify with the board. And from here, they will ask board permission to start the process of approving the exposure to draft. This we expect to publish towards the end of this year.
Thanks, Nick. Another topic that we discussed during the month was goodwill, and I think we had what's probably best described as quite an animated debate on the topic of goodwill with a couple of quite close votes. Anne, what do you think about where we landed, and also perhaps be interested to hear what your thoughts are about how we got there?
Yes, Daryl, I agree. It was an animated meeting. Goodwill is an important topic for the board in the June meeting, and indeed one that engages many of our stakeholders. And our discussions this month really culminated in the work of the staff and the board over the prior 2 years, and this work coming out of the post-implementation review of IFRS 3. So there are a lot of issues that have been considered, but of course the one that does stand out to people and engages the hearts and minds of many is this question around amortization of goodwill. As you know, of course, Daryl, that we have an impairment-only approach introduced around 2004, and the question before the board is to whether they should continue with that or indeed bring back the amortization of goodwill. Unfortunately, there is no perfect solution to this, with pluses and minuses to both sides. As a result of the research that has been carried out, we are confronted with evidence that tells us that the impairment expenses are often recognised too late. In addition, many people experience difficulties with the impairment test itself. So this raises questions for the board as to what would be our preference going forward. In terms of the vote that occurred, by a small majority, the board decided to recommend retaining the impairment-only approach, and that will be in our upcoming consultation document. So we do expect to hear quite a lot from stakeholders, but we're very interested in hearing new evidence rather than a reiteration of prior arguments. There are other areas of the project that we are looking at that we consider to be important, and one aspect is to do with better disclosures. Now, these are disclosures about acquisitions that will help investors better evaluate the subsequent performance of the acquisition, and the discussion paper will address that. We understand that additional disclosures impose costs on companies, and we're also working to see what we can propose to diminish costs for them. And these may be things like an impairment test on acquired goodwill based on indicators rather than the mandatory annual test that we have at the moment. Now, all these issues will go into the discussion paper, and we look forward to hearing stakeholders' views. We expect to publish this towards the end of this year, Daryl.
Thanks, Anne. So another one of the substantial topics that we discussed at the meeting in June was rate regulated, and this was specifically a topic that we split up into two separate sessions, an education session and a decision-making session. The education session had primarily the objective of just giving the board insight into a comparison between the US GAAP current standards on rate-regulated activities and our proposed model. And one of the discussion topics that came up during the presentation by staff on this was why we were looking at US GAAP and what the relevance of US GAAP was here. And I think what staff explained, and I think it's a very relevant point, is that for many jurisdictions, US GAAP has been the go-to solution if they are applying some form of rate-regulated accounting. And so for many entities that are looking at this space, this will be essentially their starting point. And it will be important for us to pick this up through the process of the effects analysis and others we do. But as I said, this was an education session. There was no intent for that one for the board to make any decisions. In the actual discussion section, the staff built on the papers that they had presented to us in the May 2019 meeting. And I think that's an important set of papers for anybody who's following this particular discussion. Those papers brought together all of the principles that we'd proposed to date. And so it was one composite view, if you like, of the model. In June, the staff brought back to the board some of the topics that we had specifically raised as concerns during the May meeting, or issues that the staff had flagged during the May meeting. And really, this was about two things that they were looking for decisions on. They were first looking for us to confirm some of our previous decisions, but with very specific clarifications to make the descriptions more refined. And I think particular examples of that would have been scope and the definitions of regulatory assets and liabilities. So that was the confirmation of previous decisions. But the staff also asked, and the board agreed, to change some of the previous tentative decisions. And in specific, this related to how you use discount rates in determining the measurement of the regulatory assets and liabilities. So like this project, like the other projects, some of the other projects we've discussed, we're getting towards the end on this. The next steps that the staff believe are going to be important are bringing back to the board a decision, a final decision on whether we advance this project by way of an exposure draft or a discussion paper. So the format of the next outreach activity that we conduct. And that will lead us to a view of probably consulting on the project by early next year. So that's rate regulated activities. The next one that we discussed was the IFRS for SMEs review, the comprehensive review of the standard. And I think, Anne, this is a topic that both you and I have been very involved in. So how did you think the meeting went?
Daryl, I think we are progressing on the IFRS for SMEs. The board is committed to a three-yearly review, and that time now has come round for us to do that. As we know, IFRS for SMEs standard is aimed at companies that do not have public accountability. So here we mean companies that are not listed. So the board does recognise that there are different information needs for the users of the IFRS for SMEs standard, and indeed the preparers who are looking after entities following the IFRS for SMEs standard are in a different situation. So the board is aware of that and considering that as part of the review. However, the board also recognises the need for alignment between IFRS for SMEs and full IFRS. So for this particular review, we're thinking about a request for information so that stakeholders can give us feedback on the issues that are important to IFRS for SMEs, and indeed the extent to which we should be considering updating the IFRS for SMEs for the new standards that have come along. And of course, we know that this is a period where there have been several major standards implemented. So our discussion this month talked about whether we should be aligning IFRS for SMEs with three of the recent standards, being IFRS 13, fair value measurement, IFRS 9, financial instruments, and IFRS 16, leases. I think it's fair to say that most of the board do support the approach of aligning the IFRS for SMEs with the requirements in the big full IFRS standards. However, we are looking at principles to guide us in that process, being aware, as I've mentioned, that the needs of the preparers and the users of the IFRS for SMEs standard can differ in some ways to those of the full IFRS users. We considered the issue of IFRS 14, which is regulatory deferral accounts, as well in this meeting, but we decided that we wouldn't proceed with any alignment on that. And one important factor, of course, was the project that you've just mentioned, Daryl, that would mean that we shouldn't consider an interim standard as part of our updating of IFRS for SMEs. So all these matters that the board is considering will be consulted with stakeholders via this request for information that we're currently preparing. There'll be more discussion next month, and we should be looking for stakeholder input on this project later in this year.
Thanks, Anne. The subjects we've spoken about today were all, so far today, were all important decision-making sessions in the June board meeting. The next two topics we're going to talk about weren't actually decision-making sessions, but were nonetheless very important in the process that we're following. The first of these is financial instruments with characteristics of equity. This is a project about how companies classify financial instruments that have equity components to them, but also debt components. And it's thinking about what is the most appropriate classification. And clearly, we heard through the process of the conceptual framework that this is a really important distinction for thinking about a company's financial statements and thinking about both the balance sheet and the income statement effect of it. In the previous due process step, the board published a discussion paper last year, and what the staff have been doing over the last couple of months is giving us feedback on what they heard through the comment letter process and through the various outreach activities. So in March of this year, we had feedback from the staff that gave us the very high level themes, the particular issues that had come out, but at a high level. This month, we went into a far more detailed analysis, looking at each of the individual proposals that were contained in the FICE document discussion paper, looking specifically at some of the board's discussion points in that discussion paper, and giving individual feedback and sort of passing out the feedback between the different constituents who gave their views. At the end of the meeting, staff indicated to us that they'll still bring back a further discussion on the feedback that they've heard, and that we will do that before we move on to any decision-making phase in this particular project. The other topic that we discussed where there wasn't any decision-making in the current meeting was business combinations under common control. Now, Nick, I think this is another one of those topics that gets you quite excited.
It does indeed. So this project is about accounting for combinations, so mergers and acquisitions of companies that are controlled by the same party. Also within the scope of this project are restructurings of corporate structures. So often these are just internal reorganizations, but often or equally they can happen before IPOs. So these transactions are outside the scope of IFRS 3, and indeed there are no particular specifications throughout our standards to deal with these particular circumstances. And as a result of that, what we see is diversity in practice, with many using a predecessor approach, while others using accounting that has an approach based on current values. And there are concerns about that diversity, particularly amongst regulatory stakeholders. So much of our work has been on understanding the information needs of users in relation to these transactions and whether these differ depending on the type of transaction. In particular, we've been thinking about whether we can differentiate between those transactions that affect non-controlling interests and those that do not impact non-controlling interests. In some of our previous meetings, the board decided that we don't have to pursue a single measurement approach for all of the transactions, for all business combinations under common control. So this month in particular, we reviewed national requirements, we reviewed guidance produced by the accounting firms and some recent consultations undertaken by others. And from these reviews, we could see that one common feature seemed to be a consideration of the effect of transactions on ownership interests and rights in determining, and that was a determining factor in thinking about the accounting treatment. Really, this was a meeting about giving the board an update on the staff's work. As Daryl said, there were no decisions have been made, but we're still working towards a discussion paper some stage early next year.
Thanks, Nick. Another topic that came up, and in fact is a topic that comes up at most of our board meetings, although it's a very broad topic, is implementation activities and the various things that the ISB does to support implementation. And we had a bit of a targeted discussion on one particular topic this month.
Yes, Daryl, we were looking at IAS 16, which is the Property, Plant and Equipment Standard. And the particular question was to do with what to do with the proceeds that might be received from sale of product before the property, plant and equipment is ready for its intended use. Now, the board published proposed amendments to IAS 16 in 2017 and discussed the feedback that we received from stakeholders in November 2018. The board decided to amend IAS 16 to require a company to identify and measure the cost of items produced before an item of property, plant and equipment is available for use. So if we think about an industry like extractive industries, if in the process of preparing that property, plant and equipment, saleable product is produced, the amendment will give clear guidance on how the revenue received should be treated. And this relates to entities for which this is part of their ordinary operations. For sale of items that are not part of a company's ordinary activities, the board will require disclosures about the sale proceeds and the related production costs to be in the profit or loss.
So I think this was an important board meeting for a number of projects, and I think we made some really big decisions to move these projects along. But it was also an important board meeting for another reason, because at this board meeting we said goodbye to two of our long-standing board members, Amaro Gomez and Tuck Ochi. They both come to the end of their second term on the board. Hans Hugefost, our chair, took the opportunity during the meeting to thank them for the contribution, for the efforts they made, and for what they've done for the organisation over the last number of years. But I think it's also an opportune time for us to thank them, and certainly I think for all of us here, we've appreciated working with them during the time they've been on the board. The beginning of July will see the commencement of two new board members. Tedo Chendon from Brazil and Rika Suzuka from Japan will both be starting on the 1st of July and joining the board from them. And I think that brings us to the end of the June podcast. Nick, Anne, thanks very much for that. I think if you have any feedback on these podcasts, please email us at communications@ifrs.org. Of course, there's a full summary of the board's discussions and decisions, which you can find on the IFRS Foundation's website, specifically in the ISB update for the June meeting. All of the papers that were prepared for the meeting are also available online, and of course, you can follow the board meetings live should you choose to. Thank you for listening.